Blog Talk Radio.
Celebrating Lead, Loving the Movement. Hosted by Anaya Betts and Reginald Clemens. We celebrate by recognizing the small steps and leaps and bounds of individuals and activist groups whom have led us further from slavery and closer to full freedom from mass incarceration through efforts in justice reform and society at large. Today we would like to discuss and talk to you about mass incarceration and prison industrial complex contracts and the quotas that are met, some of the methods that are utilized to meet those quotas and maintaining a certain amount of bed space in the prisons across the United States. I'm here with Anaya Betts, and we'd like to talk to you all and just talk about the subject of mass incarceration when it comes to these contracts. And I know that I personally have a situation where I feel like I've been personally affected. There are some other people who I believe they've been personally affected by this system of maintaining a certain amount of beds per capita to meet a contract quota when it comes to privatizing the prisons. But I am.
I don't have any personal experience, but I do know the long-term effects of having a private prison. The enforcement that they have, how just petty crime gets more and more strict, and the way that officers are pressured to enforce or try to create a way to detain anyone in any type of situation, it affects the community. It has an adverse effect on the community because officers then tend to just try to get the arrest so they can get the case cleared rather than actually investigate or actually uphold truth to justice. So.
Yeah, and while you're talking, one of the things I sort of think about is how police are pressured into meeting a certain ticket quota. And I'm sure that under those circumstances and situations, statistically, a lot of African Americans have fallen victim to traffic stops and searches and everything when the police have to meet those quotas. Police officers might feel that certain types of people aren't from their neighborhoods, or they might look at the community or neighborhood tags that people place in their windows in order to try and identify who's from that particular community and who's not. But either way, per capita, it seems as though African Americans are more so placed up under arrest in order for police to meet their quota. And when they're pressured to prosecute a case or come up with a suspect, it's easier to prosecute African American people. You know what I'm saying? It's economically, it's easier. Mm-hmm. And that's where in this system of mass incarceration under contracts, where not only do police officers have traffic quotas, but you have a prison system where people were maintained in prison past what their crime requires, or past what their debt to society requires. And that's where we need truth in sentencing. We need greater clarity in sentence construct.
Yeah.
There is a disparity, yes.
You mentioned when we last talked how the just the visibility for when you're in, and like you said, the the sentencing and how they purposely leave off record or off the book or of off the writing so that they can have those
and recorded.
So that they leave it off writing so that they can or the record that so that they can get into those loopholes and hold you guys longer. Can you speak more to that?
There's I don't know about other states, but in the state prison system in Missouri, you have what is called a records officer who processes your sentence and judgment papers, and it is their job to do the time calculation on when do your sentence start and when do your sentence stop. And when it comes to officers and procedure and due process and all the legal wrangling and stuff, the parole board and the records office are considered two separate entities and two separate groups. And if the records office don't give you your time credit, the parole board can't give you parole. So it creates a situation. Now, in my situation, I was on death row with a capital murder conviction. I eventually got cleared of the capital murder conviction in 2015. And after I got cleared of the capital murder conviction, I ended up making a deal for a life sentence on the murder case. And that was in 2017. But what the records office did is they started my time in 2015. Now, bear in mind, I had got locked up on the case in 1991. So all the time from 1991 to 2015, which is a total of 24 years, is not being counted towards the sentence that I am now serving. So,
You have 1 minute left.
It's a 15-year sentence. And with that 15-year sentence, they make me start that all the way over. And that's creating a situation where I'm doing an excessive amount of time on a sentence that is already completed.
Mm.
We're going to take a pause for station identification. This is Ground Zero. All
right, y'all. So as we take this break and as we...
The caller has hung up.
As we take this little short intermission break, I really would like, I want to see who's on the call. We currently have no one on the call, but that's okay. So let's take a break and let's loop this back into what we have going on as an organization. And as an organization, we are trying to find ways to be able to liberate political prisoners who are going through
sentencing
mishaps
this,
this type
press
of way.
One, to refuse this pre-call, press 2. You thank you for using Securus.
And
start the conversation.
What we want to be very, very clear on is that the way to handle or rehabilitate prisoners is not being handled correctly. It's not in a way that is conducive to the African American experience, and to an African experience of how we change and we grow and we become more viable to society as we live in our lowest self or in our state of just the lowest being of ourselves. And something that I've always tried to stress is that, like, yo, like, crime is committed first out of desperation, and that desperation then becomes habit. And that's not just a quote from me, that's a quote from my friend, right? So if you look at it from a point of view that it first becomes the desperate, and it's not necessarily all crime, but most crime, right? It mostly comes from desperation. It comes out of, this is my last straw. I personally feel like I have no other option. And then as I commit this crime, I am told that I am a criminal, or I am the crime, I am the bad thing that induces it, but instead of it just being a bad behavior. So now what I tell myself is my truth. So when I tell myself I'm a criminal, I start to think criminal things. And then for some reason, I can't stop thinking criminal things. And then I start to think that I am that of the evilness that I have done. And that's just not true. And this the way the justice system... Oh, you can go ahead, Reggie.
And I agree 100%, because that's where it's supposed to be the Department of Corrections. And they're supposed to be helping us build on redeemable character traits.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be helping us to elevate out of our lower self to become better human beings, better individuals and family members of society and community at large. And I took a class. I was in this course called the ITC program, and it's a 13-month program. It's called the Intensive Therapeutic Community, and what it is designed to do is to break you from that pattern of criminal thinking. It's designed to make you see your part, and it's in we have taken like three classes of that, and it was real, real intense. And every day you had to be on your toes and watching out for your mistakes and then seeing your part in the things that you do, and also understanding the impact of your mistakes on other people, so that you could begin to evaluate how you affect victims, how you victimize your own family, how you victimize society, and how you victimize even the people at the hospital who have to patch people back together after violent crimes and everything. They have to live with that and struggle with the inhumanity of our violence.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we find ourselves faltering and find ourselves making bad decisions or emotional decisions out of our passions or whatever, We got to learn how to take pause and think. And in that intensive therapeutic community class, it talks about how we have super optimism and we do things out of necessity, and how we misconceive things in our mind, and we have this self-image, this positive self-image of ourselves as criminals. And it's to shift the criminal thinking and criminal mind from that downward spiral, right? Well, it's sad to say, there's been efforts to gradually dismantle that ITC, Intensive Therapeutic Community Program. There was once an article done on it in the Wall Street Journal. That's how effective it is, and how dynamic it is when it comes to helping an individual become rehabilitated. It has like a 86% success rate. But
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Unfortunately, the prison system has turned away from its primary focus being rehabilitation. and it's become about profit margins, where they get like $48,000 per prisoner a year. That's a lot of money.
Right.
But I wear the same clothes on a daily basis. I got three changes of clothes that I wear throughout the week. I have four boxers that's provided by the state, and I only get another pair of boxers every 3 months. And I can only get socks and t-shirts every 6 months. Well, I can get socks every 3 months. I can only get t-shirts every 6 months. So it's not going toward my clothes or my wardrobe. And when you take and you put money and profit over people, over humanity, and our and rehabilitation and prison system, that's when you end up with situations where people get denied parole not based up on their rehabilitation efforts, but based up on filling up beds and bed space. Because I believe that's why I was denied parole. And because the records office had miscalculated my time, and they refused to fix it. And I don't know, that's what makes me feel like it's not safe, because of the mistake. And I'll point it out to you and show you where the mistake is. It don't make no more sense. It doesn't add up. That I'm doing 27 years on a 15-year sentence because of a miscalculation by an individual. That's not an accidental miscalculation if it's pointed out again and again and we have to go to court about this miscalculation. And then the judge overlooks and denies the issue, and now we're in the appeal process on a 24-year time miscalculation. It has me doing 27 years on a 15-year sentence. But a parole board, even though I've gone through a rehabilitation program, I wrote the parole board and asked them, okay, I've gone through these rehabilitation programs. I've got a pretty clean record. I don't have any stabbings. I haven't been stabbing, run around stabbing people like a maniac or like a high head or extorting people for money or anything. I haven't got any Rule 15s, which is for sexual activity that's against the rules. I've gotten into some fights here and there. I've been locked up for 30 years. That's to be expected in an aggressive environment to a certain extent. I haven't had any fights in over 10 years since my last fight. And I don't plan on getting into any fights because I've grown, I've learned a lot about myself and the environment that I'm in. I know a little bit more about how to navigate through and around different situations now than I did before. So I don't have any drug possessions, no dirty urines. There's a lot of things that are not in my record that would implicate likelihood of continued criminality. I don't have anything in my record that implicates a likelihood of continued criminality. And the only conclusion that I can come to is that because they have to fill up bed space, they deny me parole, they fudge my records, and I've been coming across more and more people that have this particular issue. And that's something that I hope somebody's listening. And anybody that is possibly listening, I would like you to go to the African American Trust Fund blog site and offer any advice or any references to somebody that you feel or you know of that might be investigating this particular issue. When it comes to pattern and practice, because I know Eric Holder, when he was Attorney General, did a lot of significant pattern and practice investigations after the Ferguson the Ferguson protest when Mike Brown was killed, and there's been a lot of pattern and practice investigations across the country about different situations. And also, I'm wondering, and I would like somebody to let me know, because I haven't seen any news articles. I haven't been able to find out anything factually just yet, but I'm looking into it, on whether or not the Missouri Department of Corrections is now a privatized entity. Because the guards around here don't even wear uniforms.
We got 9 minutes.
And the guards around here don't wear uniforms. And I don't know exactly who it is that we can contact at this point, but I'll say this is a substantial subject, because there are people sitting in prison illegal with intentional time miscalculations, where they've been denied 2 and 3 years of time. Mine's to the extreme. And right now, we need your help to deal with this issue, to bring light to this issue, to shed light on this issue. And that's what we do here at Ground Zero, is we try to get down to the bare bone facts of a problem and to the root of a problem. We're open, plain discussion, and being trying to come work on coming up with a solution. Because I personally don't believe in complaining about problems that I'm not trying to solve. Because if we're complaining about it, then that means it needs to be addressed. And we need to strengthen this country and strengthen our humanity while we celebrate us for humanity and celebrate love and movement by helping to fix these problems that we know are moving in the wrong direction. It doesn't help our society become stronger to have people sitting and languishing in prison where we're not productive members of society. Instead, we're a burden to society. And if you keep me locked up to the point where until I start having medical issues and release me because I'm no longer economically viable to the prison system, then I become a financial burden to society.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And I thank you for listening. I thank you for taking out the time to hear me out. I thank you for coming back, and I hope you come back again and again as we further develop solutions and further deepen our understanding of the problems that we face as a society when it comes to mass incarceration and the economic oppression of people, so we can help liberate ourselves, the poor and oppressed, and celebrate those that help uplift our humanity.
Awesome. So we have 5 minutes left, and we just want to just wrap up the show with the final message and the final words that's going to tie the things together a little bit, so that you guys truly, truly understand why we are telling you this information, and then just what we want to come of the information shared. Go ahead, Ricky.
Yes, the African American Trust Fund is there to bring down the crime rate, through create job opportunities, and through create education opportunities. And the way that the African American Trust Fund goes about doing that is it invests in intellectual property protection and uses those ideas, those inventions, and those advancements to help push the envelope on leading-edge technology, to industrialize those ideas and inventions. And in that way, generate jobs and create jobs by industrializing those ideas and pushing them to market so that we can begin to have generational wealth. And that will begin to provide the resources and provide the education opportunity that will bring down the crime rate. Speaking, whenever there's job opportunities lost and there's education opportunities lost in a community, the crime rate goes up. People lose their self-worth. Families begin to break up, domestic violence increases, which creates the problem of, you know, that's when people start drinking and getting engaged in drug activity, because people start developing drug addictions. But we need to fill that void with the love for the movement. And that's what African American Trust Fund goal is to begin to industrialize African American ideas and intellectual property. And in that way, create job opportunity and education opportunity. I encourage you to go to the blog site and help by contributing information and help by making donations to the cause of pushing the African American Trust Fund so that we can have the necessary resources to protect people's intellectual property rights.
All right. So that is aatrustfund.org to learn more, and then blog.aatrustfund.org to continue the conversation. In these last couple of minutes, I want to point out that imagine just being able to have a fund that uplifts the rights in your ownership of your ideas, of your property, of just even your ability to have a network that can protect and advocate for what you own. That's what this ultimately is trying to establish. And by establishing this, it'll set us apart with full human rights in the United Nations is the ultimate goal, in giving us our ability to be our own sovereign nation in the United States of America. And that way we will have say over our own bodies and our rights, even if we do get tied up in their criminal justice system. We will have say in our own people's...
You have 1 minute left.
Our own people's contribution to what it is that we are here in America doing today. And it not just being stripped from us and us being tossed in cages like animals.
Love you all, and hope to come back again, and hope that you help.
All right, and there is nobody on the call, so I'm just going to end it. Thank you, and have a wonderful rest of your day.